She walked into the confessional not to be forgiven, but to start a fire. What begins as a seductive game between a grieving woman and a guilt-ridden priest spirals into a war against the church that buried her mother's pain. Secrets unravel, vows are shattered, and every whispered confession becomes a weapon. In a world where sin hides behind stained glass and silence, one woman will use desire, manipulation, and truth to burn it all down. This isn't about redemption, this is the confession booth. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you The Confession Booth. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, Bless Me, Father. They say confession is sacred, a private ritual between sinner and savior, where guilt is spilled like wine and forgiveness comes wrapped in silence. But I never stepped into that booth for salvation. I stepped in to set a fire. You see, I wasn't born wicked. I was made this way, crafted, carved, and burned into shape by years of pretending to be the good girl. The one who kneeled the right way, who wore skirts past her knees, who spoke softly and swallowed every insult wrapped in scripture. I used to believe that God was watching, that he saw everything. But now, I believe something different. God doesn't watch. He lets things happen, and I don't trust anyone who just watches. That Sunday morning, I woke up early, way before the sun painted the walls with gold. I lit a single candle in the kitchen and sat there in my underwear, the cold tile under my feet grounding me in the present. My apartment was still, too still. It always was. The silence only broke when the neighbors argued, or when I let my own voice echo off the walls during those lonely nights. I sipped my coffee slowly, no cream, no sugar. Bitter, like the truth I was about to unleash. I chose my outfit carefully, modest but fitted. A black pencil skirt that hugged my hips, a white blouse buttoned up to the third notch, just enough to hint without screaming. I tied my hair into a low bun, slid on my church heels, and dabbed my neck with a scent that could make even angels sin. I looked like a woman headed to Sunday service, but under that polished skin was a storm. I arrived at St. Augustine's just after 9 a.m. Mass didn't start for another 30 minutes, but I liked being early. I liked watching people. The self-righteous. The broken. The liars. The gossips. All of them stumbled in, dressed in fake humility, acting like the walls of this place made them holy. Newsflash, they didn't. You could drown a body in holy water, and it wouldn't cleanse what they kept hidden. I slid into my usual pew, third row from the front, far left. Close enough to watch the pulpit, but not center stage. That was important. Attention, but not suspicion. I crossed my legs slowly and placed the leather-bound Bible on my lap that I hadn't opened in 3 years. I smiled politely at Sister Mary, who always sat one pew back and to the right, judging me with that crooked little cross pin on her shoulder. "Good morning, child," she said, her voice wrapped in vinegar. "God bless you, sister," I replied sweetly, like sugar-laced poison. And then he appeared. Father Nathan. Every woman in that church thought about him. Even if they didn't admit it, not even to themselves. He was too young, too handsome, too untouched. Mid-30s tall, with broad shoulders that tested the limits of his cassock. His jaw was sharp, clean-shaven every time, and his eyes, green and glassy, held a sadness that made women want to heal him. He walked with quiet confidence, like someone who had seen real pain and survived it. I wondered more than once if his soul was as disciplined as his body. But me? I didn't want to heal him. I wanted to ruin him. Mass passed like background noise. I didn't hear the sermon. I watched his lips move, imagined them against my collarbone. I studied the way his hands gripped the Bible, firm, reverent. I wondered what those hands would do if he ever let go of God for just 1 second. Just one. When the final hymn ended and the people scattered like frightened birds, I stayed seated. I waited. Patience was my virtue now. Eventually, the line for confession formed. They took their turns like they always did. Old Mr. Lenton first, then the mother of four who always cried about cheating on her diet, followed by a teenager who probably confessed to touching herself in the dark. It was a parade of shame, wrapped in rehearsed guilt. None of them were interesting. None of them were dangerous. But I was. When the last penitent walked away, I stood. My heels clicked against the marble floor, echoing through the empty sanctuary. That sound, it was power. I wanted him to hear it. I wanted him to feel it in his spine. The confessional booth was tucked in the back corner of the church, behind the tall candles and the statue of Mary. I slipped inside, closed the door behind me, and knelt on the cushion that smelled faintly of dust and incense. He was already on the other side. I could hear the slow, steady rhythm of his breath through the wooden divider. He didn't speak at first. So I did. "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned," I whispered, letting the words drip from my tongue like molasses. "Smooth. Slow. Sinful. How long has it been since your last confession, my child?" he asked. His voice was deeper than I remembered. Tired. Weathered. It made my stomach twist. I leaned forward, close enough to see the outline of his shadow behind the screen. 3 days. He hesitated. That wasn't normal. But I wasn't a normal parishioner. I never had been. "I've had thoughts," I continued. "Wicked ones. About a man I see every week. A man who wears black. A man who pretends he doesn't notice when women stare." His silence was loud. "I dream about him, Father. Not sweet, innocent dreams. No. These are dreams soaked in sweat and gasping breath. In my dreams, he's not so holy. These are impure thoughts," he said quickly. "Too quickly. You must ask God for strength to overcome temptation." "Maybe I don't want to overcome it," I said softly. "Maybe I want to taste it. Feel it. Maybe I want to know what it's like to be the reason someone breaks." He cleared his throat. "You should pray for your soul." "I don't want to pray, Father," I said, unbuttoning the top of my blouse, knowing he couldn't see me, but feeling the thrill anyway. "I want to confess. I want to be honest about what I feel. I want to drag it into the light and let it burn." "Stop," he said. But his voice betrayed him. It cracked. It shook. "I see the way you look at me when you think I'm not watching," I whispered. "Do you pray harder after I leave? Do you get on your knees and beg God to kill the thoughts I leave behind?" "No more. This is not appropriate," he said, nearly choking on the words. But he didn't leave. He stayed. I smiled. My lips brushed against the wood of the screen. "I'm not here for forgiveness, Father. I don't want your mercy. I want your weakness." I stood up slowly, deliberately. My knees cracked softly from kneeling too long. I didn't rush. I let every second linger. When I stepped out of the booth, I didn't look back. I didn't need to. He would sit there long after I left, surrounded by shadows and sin. And later, when he thought he was alone, when he locked the booth and prayed for strength, he'd never know I had wired the confessional 2 weeks ago. Tiny Mike hidden in the seams of the wood, capturing every breath, every hesitation, every confession. I opened my laptop the moment I got home, poured myself a glass of red wine, kicked off my shoes, and hit play. There it was. My voice, seductive and soft. His, trembling. Full of denial. Full of need. Crystal clear. Perfect. This wasn't just a game. This was a war. And I had just fired the first shot. Chapter 2, his voice in the dark. There's something addictive about control. Not the fake kind. The one they teach women to crave through submission and silence. I'm talking about the real thing. The kind that seeps into your bones and coils around your spine. The kind that makes men forget who they are. What they stand for. Who they answer to. After I played the recording that night, I didn't sleep. I lay in bed in nothing but my lace panties, the laptop still glowing on the nightstand, his trembling voice echoing softly through the speakers like a lullaby twisted in sin. "Stop. This is not appropriate." But he didn't stop, did he? He didn't hang up his collar and walk out. He sat there, stunned, soaking in my confession like a man dying of thirst at the edge of a poisoned river. And I could hear it, behind every word, every breath, his restraint unraveling. I ran my fingers along my collarbone, letting them drift lower as I replayed his voice again. My body trembled, not with lust, not exactly. This was something deeper, something darker. I wasn't just seducing him. I was turning God's house into my stage. And I was just getting started. By Monday morning, the Catholic rumor mill was already spinning. I passed Sister Mary outside the parish office, and she clutched her handbag like I was the whore of Babylon come to life. Maybe I was. Her lips tightened, her eyes narrowed, but I gave her my sweetest smile, the kind that made her second-guess every awful thing she wanted to say out loud. "Blessed morning, sister," I chirped, letting my blouse flutter just enough in the breeze to tease. She said nothing, just watched me like she knew something wasn't right. She was right, of course. Nothing was right. Not anymore. I walked straight past her and into the church. No appointment. No warning. Just bold footsteps echoing across polished marble, as if I owned the place. And in a way, I did. He was in his office, small, dimly lit, walls lined with books on theology, worn prayer candles, and a crucifix hanging crooked over his desk. I knocked twice. Firm, but polite. A sinner's knock wrapped in good girl manners. "Come in," he called. When he looked up and saw me, his jaw locked. His eyes flickered like he'd just remembered a nightmare and wasn't sure if he was still asleep. "Miss Langley," he said, standing too quickly. His tone was professional, neutral, but his fingers twitched where they gripped the edge of his desk. "Amelia," I corrected gently, closing the door behind me. "I wasn't expecting." "I know," I said, walking toward him slowly. "But after our moment on Sunday, I thought it would be best if we cleared the air." He swallowed, loud enough for me to hear. "There was nothing to clear. You crossed a line. That's all." I sat down without asking, crossed my legs slowly, let my skirt rise just enough to make his eyes dart down before he forced them back up. "You seemed affected," I said softly, my voice low and intimate. "You paused. You shook. You told me to stop, but you didn't leave. You stayed. I stayed because it's my duty to hear confessions, even when they're inappropriate." "Inappropriate," I repeated, tasting the word like wine on my tongue. "Interesting choice." He sat down, clearly uncomfortable, his hands clenched together as if in prayer. But his gaze betrayed him. He looked tired, haunted, like I had carved a crack down the center of his devotion, and he couldn't stop the light, or the darkness, from pouring in. "I'm not here to accuse you of anything," I said sweetly. "I'm here because I don't want to be misunderstood." He didn't respond, so I leaned forward, placing both elbows on his desk, my voice a whisper meant for just the two of us and whatever God he thought still watched. "I'm lonely, Father." His jaw tightened. "I come to this church every week because I need something. I need connection, warmth, and maybe that's a sin, but it's real. And you, of all people, should know that the line between faith and desire isn't always clean." He looked at me, really looked this time, like he was trying to see the broken parts behind the seduction. And maybe I let him, just a little. But I wasn't there to be healed. I was there to bleed him dry. "You're playing a dangerous game," he said, voice low. "I know," I replied. "But you haven't walked away." He didn't deny it. I stood up slowly, letting the silence stretch between us like a thin thread ready to snap. I moved to the door, then paused. Turned around. "One more strike. I'll be here Wednesday night. Early. Before choir practice. I'd like to speak again. Privately. In the booth." He said nothing, but his silence screamed. I left without waiting for a response. Wednesday night, I arrived early. The church was empty except for a few candles flickering near the altar. I wore a dark red dress this time. Still respectful, still knee-length, but with sleeves just sheer enough to make the dim candlelight flirt with my skin. My heels echoed in the quiet like warning bells. I slipped into the booth before he even arrived. I waited in the dark, surrounded by old wood, the scent of incense thick in my nostrils. My heart beat like a drum, not from nerves, from excitement. He entered minutes later. I knew it was him by the way the air shifted. He sat down, closed the screen. No greeting. So I spoke. "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned." Silence. "It's been 2 days since my last confession." His voice, when it came, was tired. "Warren, you said you needed to talk." I smiled. "I do." He waited. "I want to tell you about my past," I began slowly. "About why I come here. Why I sit alone every Sunday and stare at you like I'm starving. I don't need to know your—" "You do," I cut in, "because I see the way you look at me. You try to hide it, but your eyes speak louder than your prayers." He didn't argue. "I was 19 when I lost everything that mattered," I said. "My mother, my innocence, my faith, all in the same week." I paused. "She was raped, Father, by a man from the church, a man who led Bible study, a man they protected." Silence. "I was told to forgive, to pray, to move on. But no one listened. Not even you people." He exhaled sharply. The air between us cracked. "So I decided that if God wasn't going to deliver justice, I would." "Amelia." His voice was laced with something I couldn't place. "Fear? Pity? Regret?" "I didn't care. I see what this place really is. What you all hide. I've watched. I've listened. And now, I'm recording." His breath caught. "I didn't come to confess," I whispered. "I came to destroy the system that let men like that thrive." He moved like he was about to leave. "But you, Father? You're just the first nail." Then I stood and left him in the dark. And just like that, St. Augustine's had its first taste of judgment. Not from God. From me. Chapter 3. His hands were shaking. It started with the hands. I noticed it first the following Sunday, when he stood at the pulpit delivering a sermon about spiritual warfare. About resisting temptation and guarding one's soul against the whispers of the flesh. His words tried to reach the heavens, but his hands betrayed him. They trembled. It wasn't from age. No, it was because of me. Because I had crawled inside him, sunk into his thoughts like a virus of seduction and defiance, and now he couldn't exorcise me. He tried to look past me, avoid eye contact, pretend I wasn't sitting in the third pew in that black dress with the slit up the side, the one I'd never dare wear to church before. But he felt me. I made sure of it. I didn't cross my legs. I let them stay parted just enough. My posture was regal, unbothered, controlled. I was the lioness, and the priest was the lamb who refused to run. Let them all look. Let the whole damn congregation think I was shameless. Because I was. Shame was for the weak, the hypocrites, the ones who swallowed their truth to keep their seats at God's table. I was past that. And so was he, even if he couldn't admit it yet. When the sermon ended, I didn't rush out. I stayed seated, letting the pews empty around me, letting their judgment soak into my skin like cheap perfume. Sister Mary whispered something sharp behind me, probably a prayer or a curse. I didn't care. Let her pray. Let them all pray. Because prayers don't stop storms. They just give people something to whisper when the lightning starts to burn. Eventually, the church emptied. The choir girls packed up their hymnals. The organist coughed twice, dragging his old bones toward the back door. But I waited, and just like I knew he would, Nathan came to me. "Amelia," he said, voice low, uncertain. "Can we talk?" I tilted my head and stood slowly. "Of course, Father." We didn't speak as we walked. Not until we reached his office again. Our little sanctuary of secrets and unraveling faith. The door clicked shut behind us, and that sound, it was the beginning of something irreversible. He sat behind his desk, and I stood across from him, arms crossed gently under my chest, heart steady, breathing soft. "I need you to stop," he said finally. "This can't continue." "What exactly are you asking me to stop?" I asked, tilting my head. "This game, these conversations, they're inappropriate. I've only been honest with you, Father," I said, stepping forward slowly. "Isn't that what confession is for? To speak our truth." He looked at me like I was speaking another language, one he wanted to understand but couldn't afford to. "I've taken vows," he said, "and I intend to keep them." "Of course," I whispered, taking another step. "But that doesn't mean you haven't already started breaking them." He swallowed hard. "That's not true. You stayed. Every time. You listened. You didn't report me to the bishop. You didn't call me unwell. You listened. Because something in you wanted to hear it." "You're twisting this," he said, but it came out flat. I leaned forward, placing my palms on his desk. "Your hands shook this morning," I said softly. "When you held the communion chalice. When you spoke about the flesh. You were talking about me, weren't you?" "No," he said. I smiled. "Lying doesn't suit you, Father." He stood abruptly, pushing his chair back, turning toward the window like the stained glass might save him from himself. I walked up behind him, close enough to breathe the same air, close enough to smell the conflict dripping off his skin like holy sweat. "I'm not trying to ruin you," I whispered, lying through my teeth. "I just want you to be real. Just once. Drop the robe. Drop the mask. Be a man." He turned suddenly, too quickly, and for a second we were face to face. I could feel it. The edge. The moment. He was unraveling, and I was pulling every thread. "I've seen men like you fall," I said, quieter now, no longer teasing. "Good men. Strong men. Men who thought they could outpray their desire." He didn't blink. "And what happens to them?" he asked. "They become something else," I said. "Something honest. Something dangerous. Something free. Silence." God, I lived for the silence between our breaths. He backed away finally, sat down again, rubbed his temples with his fingers. "I can't do this," he said. "But you already are," I replied. He stared at me for a long time, and then he asked the question I had been waiting for. "Why me?" I sat across from him, finally, leaned back, crossed my legs. "Because you're not like the others," I said, tone softer now. "You weren't the one who hurt my mother. You weren't the one who covered it up. You weren't even here then. But you wear the same cloth. You represent the same altar. And I needed someone who was human enough to be reached." He shook his head slowly, but his eyes didn't leave mine. "I don't want to be part of your revenge," he whispered. "You already are." That hit him. Hard. I recorded our last confession. I said, no longer hiding. Every word. It's stored on a cloud server. Safe. Hidden. Insurance. His body froze. "If you try to ban me from this church, it'll leak. If you try to report me, it'll leak. If you lie to me, it'll leak. You're blackmailing a priest. I'm blackmailing a man, I corrected. The collar doesn't make you immune. He looked down at his hands. And there it was again. The shaking. So small. So faint. But I saw it. You won't win, he muttered. I already have, I said, standing. Then I leaned over, my lips close to his ear. But I'm not done yet. I walked out of the room and down the hall, my heels tapping like war drums in the quiet corridor. And behind me, I left a man shattered by a truth he couldn't pray away. Chapter 4, The Flesh is Weak. I've always believed that desire is stronger than faith. Faith is abstract. It's an idea, a belief in something you can't see, touch, or hold when the nights are long and the silence is suffocating. But desire? Desire is real. Tangible. It crawls under your skin, settles between your legs, coils in your gut, and whispers the things your God says you shouldn't want. It doesn't wait for a Sunday sermon. It doesn't kneel. It doesn't beg. And Father Nathan, he was drowning in it. That Wednesday night marked the shift. The unraveling. The moment he stopped being just another priest in a robe and started becoming a man. A weak, lonely, guilty man. A man spiraling toward a truth that terrified him. I didn't go back to church that weekend. I didn't call. Didn't text. Didn't hover outside the parish office pretending to be lost in prayer. I vanished. And I did it deliberately. Because nothing gnaws at a man's soul like absence. Letting him feel the silence. Letting it grow teeth and bite at the corners of his resolve. Letting him wonder where I'd gone. Whether I was planning something. Whether I'd spoken to anyone. Whether the recording, the one he now knew existed, was suddenly in someone else's hands. Let him stew in it. Let it rot him from the inside out. And it worked. By Monday morning, I had 6 missed calls from an unknown number. I listened to the voicemail he finally left on the 6th try. Amelia, this is Nathan. I mean Father Nathan. Please call me. We need to talk. Privately. Soon. His voice was taut. Dry. Frantic. Like someone gasping for air after nearly drowning in their own sins. I didn't call him back. Not immediately. I waited until Tuesday night, just after 9, when I knew he'd be finishing Vespers and the church would be empty. I texted him 2 words, meet me. No location. No explanation. But I knew he'd come. And he did. I chose the old rectory office at the back of the church. The one they stopped using years ago because of water damage and creaky floors. It was cold, dim, and reeked of mildew and dust. The perfect place to kill a man's spirit. When he stepped inside, he looked like hell. His collar was loose. His hair unkempt. His eyes sunken in like he hadn't slept since we last spoke. Which, judging by the bags under his eyes, was probably true. Where have you been? He asked, breathless. I stood by the window, staring out at the shadowy graveyard behind the church. I didn't answer him. Not yet. I wanted him uncomfortable. I wanted him to feel the imbalance of power settle like fog between us. I needed time to think, I finally said. You disappeared. You needed space, I shrugged. I gave it to you. His jaw clenched. This isn't a game. I turned to face him. Isn't it? No, he snapped. This is real. You're playing with fire. I am the fire. He flinched like I'd struck him. Good. You've made your point, he said, softening his voice. You're angry. You've been hurt. I understand that. But what you're doing now, it's not healing. It's destruction. Maybe destruction is my healing, I said coldly. I'm not your enemy, Amelia. Then stop acting like one. A heavy silence fell between us. He took a step forward, then stopped. His hands were shaking again. He hid them in his pockets like I wouldn't notice. But I did. I noticed everything about him now. I'm sorry for what happened to your mother, he said, his voice cracking with sincerity. I stared at him. She was raped, I said flatly. By a man who wore the same collar you do. His shoulders sank. She came to this church for help. She trusted your system. And they covered it up. Silenced her. Shamed her. Do you know what that does to a woman? He didn't answer. She started drinking to sleep. Taking pills to breathe. And one night she didn't wake up. His eyes shimmered. But I wasn't finished. And I've spent every day since wondering how many more women your precious church has buried in silence. He lowered his gaze. I didn't know. I wasn't here. But you are now, I said. And that makes you accountable. He swallowed hard. What do you want from me? I walked toward him slowly, each step deliberate. I want you to feel what she felt. The fear. The shame. The helplessness. I want you to see how fragile your faith really is when someone turns the spotlight on you. And if I do, he asked, his voice barely audible. If I break, then what? Then maybe you'll understand. We were inches apart now. I could smell the scent of old incense and sweat on his skin. His breath was shaky. His lips parted like he was about to say something else, but he didn't. Instead, he looked at me like I was both salvation and damnation. And then I kissed him. Soft. Slow. Like a confession. At first, he didn't move. Didn't breathe. But then, his hands gripped my waist. Tightly. Desperately. And he kissed me back. Harder. Hungrier. Like a man who had been starving for something he wasn't allowed to taste. I let it happen. Let him feel the fullness of what he'd been denying. Let him fall. Because that moment was more than lust. It was leverage. I pulled away slowly, leaving his lips wet and trembling. And then I whispered. I recorded that too. His face went white. You what? There's a camera in the vent, I said calmly, pointing toward the ceiling. High def. No audio needed. Your hand said enough. You set me up. No, I smiled. You set yourself up. I just gave you the space to do it. He stepped back, horrified. Betrayed. Lost. You don't know what you've done, he whispered. Oh, I know exactly what I've done. I walked toward the door. Paused. Looked over my shoulder. This isn't about revenge anymore, Father. It's about exposure. He collapsed into the old wooden chair behind him, eyes wide, breathing shallow. And I left him there in that cold, decaying room, surrounded by ghosts' guilt and the ruins of his piety. I didn't look back, because the next move was his. And no matter what he chose, he'd already lost. Chapter 5. All sins are not equal. The next morning, I woke up with the taste of him still on my lips, bitter, conflicted, and laced with desperation. That kiss wasn't about love. It wasn't even about lust. It was about power. And now I had all of it. I lay in bed for hours, naked under the thin sheet, the morning light slicing across my skin like judgment. I didn't feel guilt. I felt electric. Every breath I took was sharp, charged with the aftermath of what I had done. What we had done. I had kissed a priest. He had kissed me back. I had recorded it. And now he was mine. But this was never just about blackmail. It was about control. About cracking the mask of holiness and watching the truth crawl out from underneath. Watching him bleed. I took my time that morning. Made myself breakfast for the first time in weeks. Eggs, bacon, toast, black coffee. I played soft jazz through my speakers and left the windows open so the neighbors could hear my laughter as I danced in the kitchen like a woman free of consequence. By the time I checked my phone, there were 4 new voicemails. All from him. I didn't listen to a single one. I already knew what they said. Apologies. Please. Maybe even threats disguised as spiritual warnings. None of it mattered. He had crossed the line, and there was no holy ground left to run to. That night, I went to the church again. Not for Massachusetts. Not for confession. For war. I wore black leather pants, a silk blouse that clung to my skin like sin, and red heels that clicked like a metronome of danger across the marble floor. The sanctuary was dimly lit. A few scattered candles flickered by the altar, their flames trembling as if they sensed my presence. I knew he'd be there. He always came back to the scene of the crime. I found him in the front pew, his head bowed, elbows on his knees, hands clasped together in a pose of forced repentance. His collar was gone, just a plain black shirt now. His hair was a mess. His eyes were hollow. Good. He didn't hear me approach. I stood beside him in the pew, letting the silence stretch until it choked the space between us. You look like you've been praying, I said softly. He looked up slowly, eyes red. I have. Did he answer this time? He didn't reply. Let me guess, I said, sliding into the pew beside him. You asked him for strength, for forgiveness, maybe even for a sign. His silence said everything. And then you remembered my mouth on yours, my body pressed against you, my breath in your ear. Stop, he said sharply. But his voice lacked weight. Why? I leaned closer. Because it's still there? Still burning in your memory like incense on skin. He looked at me, pain etched deep into every line on his face. I broke my vow. No, I said. You finally told the truth. He shook his head. You don't understand. I've given my life to this. My soul. My purpose. And what has it given you back? I snapped. Loneliness? Silence? Nightmares dressed in white robes and crucifixes. He closed his eyes like my words hurt more than the silence ever did. I was called to this. No, Nathan. You were told you were called to this. Probably when you were 15 and confused and desperate to matter. You think God picked you? Or did some broken man in robes tell you that you'd only be worth something if you sacrificed yourself for a lie? He stood abruptly, his hands trembling. You don't get to mock my faith. I'm not mocking it, I said, rising to face him. I'm exposing it. He stepped back. What do you want from me? I smiled. Everything. Later that night, I opened the video on my laptop. The one from the vent camera. High definition, just like I promised. There he was, hands on my waist, lips on mine, eyes closed, surrendering. I paused it at the perfect frame. His hands clenched around the fabric of my blouse. His body arched toward me. Vulnerable. Hungry. Human. I stared at it for a long time. And then I opened a blank email. I typed in the address of the diocese's communications director. No subject. Just the video. I hovered my cursor over send for a full minute. Not because I was hesitating, but because I wanted to feel the weight of it. The power. The judgment. I didn't click send. Not yet. Because I wasn't finished. This wasn't about destroying Nathan. It was about peeling the skin off the church, layer by hypocritical layer, until the rot underneath screamed for mercy. And I needed him to help me do it, whether he liked it or not. 2 days later, he showed up at my apartment. Unannounced. Desperate. I opened the door in a robe and nothing else, my skin still damp from the bath I'd taken moments before. Steam drifted out into the hallway as I met his eyes. Are you insane? He whispered, glancing over his shoulder. What if someone saw me come here? Then maybe they'll finally realize you're human. Amelia. I stepped aside and let him in without another word. He paced the floor of my living room, his hands in his hair, panic radiating off him like heat. I sat on the couch and crossed my legs. Relax, Father. No one followed you. I can't sleep, he said. I can't breathe. I keep seeing that video in my head. Then maybe you should watch the real thing, I said, pointing to my laptop on the coffee table. You're insane. No, I said. I'm focused. He turned to face me, eyes bloodshot and wide. Why are you doing this? Because this church destroyed my mother. And now you want to destroy me? No, I said slowly. I want to use you. He didn't speak. I stood up and walked toward him, slowly, deliberately, like a prayer turned into a weapon. I have a list, I whispered. Names. Dates. People still sitting in those pews with skeletons hidden beneath their rosaries. The man who raped my mother wasn't alone. There were others. Still are. And I'm going to burn them all. He stared at me like he was seeing something monstrous and holy at once. And what do you need from me? I stepped close, brushed my fingers against his collarbone. Access. Records. Trust. Your silence. He was shaking again. You're asking me to betray everything I've ever stood for. I smiled. I'm asking you to finally stand for something. He didn't move, didn't speak, but he didn't leave either. And that was all the answer I needed. Chapter 6, The Judas Gospel. They say every betrayal starts with a kiss. But mine started with a confession. And by now, that single whisper in the booth had grown into a roaring fire, consuming everything, melting holy things into something unrecognizable. Father Nathan had crossed the line. Now he stood with me on the edge of the abyss, and I was holding his hand. He didn't show up the next day, or the day after that. I wasn't surprised. He needed time. Time to grieve the man he once thought he was. Time to drown in shame and guilt and self-hatred. Time to beg a silent God for forgiveness he'd never give. But I knew he'd return, because I'd made him taste truth. And once you taste it, the lie never goes down easy again. On the third night, I found him sitting outside my apartment. Hoodie on. Hood up. Head down. He looked like a junkie trying to outrun his demons. And in a way, he was. Only his drug had been God, and I'd made him overdose on reality. I opened the door and stood over him. You hungry? He looked up at me. Hollow. Broken. But alive in a way he'd never been before. I didn't wait for an answer. I walked back inside. He followed. I fed him pasta and red wine and sat across the table as he devoured it like he hadn't eaten in days. He probably hadn't. I watched the way his fingers trembled around the fork. The way his eyes darted to mine, then away. Like a man still afraid of wanting what he already had. When he finished, I poured another glass and pushed it across the table. He took it without a word. I've made peace with hell, I said softly. Have you? He stared into the wine like it might hold a different answer than the one swimming in his gut. I'm not sure I believe in hell anymore, he muttered. Good, I smiled. That makes this easier. He looked up slowly. I went into the archives. My heart fluttered, just once, like the soft click of a trigger. I found some of the names you mentioned. Priests transferred after scandals. Pages redacted. Reports buried. It's worse than I thought. It always is, I said. There are dozens of files, he said. Maybe hundreds. Covered up. Locked away. There's a coded index system. I had to find the back door. And now you're in? He nodded. I stood slowly across the room and sat beside him. Our knees touched. Our shoulders brushed. He didn't flinch this time. You ready to do something real with that access? He turned to me, breathing heavy. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. You're telling the truth, I said. For the first time in your entire goddamn life. I thought I was saving souls. No. You were silencing screams. He winced. I didn't know. But now you do. Silence fell between us. Not cold, not hostile, just heavy. Truth always weighed more than lies. He finally looked me in the eye. What do you want to do? I want to leak it, I said. Slowly. One file at a time. An anonymous blog. A press leak. A storm. He swallowed. And me. You're my Judas, I said. Only this time, Judas isn't betraying Christ. He's betraying the machine that sold his name like a brand. We got to work that night. In the quiet of my apartment, with the curtains drawn and the lights dimmed, we pored over files like war generals plotting a siege. Names. Transfer records. Victim statements hidden under redacted black lines. One priest had 27 allegations. Moved 6 times. Died with a stained glass window in his honor. Another had written a letter confessing everything, then mysteriously vanished. Nathan read the documents like they were scripture. Only this time he didn't look for hope. He looked for patterns. Evidence. Weak points in the church's carefully constructed facade. I baptized children with these hands, he said once, looking down at his trembling fingers. I stood in front of grieving families and told them God had a plan. I reached over and grabbed his wrist. You didn't hurt them, but you can avenge them. He nodded, a slow, haunted nod. The kind that belongs to men who know they're too deep to crawl back out. We launched the blog within 3 days. Simple name, the Judas Gospel. First post, the man who raped my mother. We used the redacted file, matched with his known assignments, and connected him to multiple allegations spanning 15 years. We included quotes from survivor interviews, a photo of his church's stained glass tribute, and a timeline of silent transfers. We didn't name Nathan. Not yet. We let the story simmer. By the third post, it was trending anonymously on Catholic message boards. Journalists started sniffing around. The diocese released a vague statement about unverified leaks and cyber defamation. But we weren't guessing. We had proof. Inside access. Their own words. And Nathan? He kept showing up at my door. Not as a priest. Not as a man of God. But as a man with blood on his collar and truth in his fists. Each night he brought more files. And each night we got closer. Closer to the truth. Closer to each other. We didn't fuck. Not yet. But we were circling it. Breathing it. Every time our fingers brushed over a document. Every time we stared too long. Every time silence lingered in the room and neither of us broke it. We were building something bigger than lust. Something more dangerous. And deep down I knew. He was falling in love with me. But love wasn't part of the plan. Love complicated everything. Love made monsters hesitate. On the 7th day of our mission, I caught him staring at me while I slept. I didn't say anything at first. Just let him look. Let him ache. When I opened my eyes, he flinched, embarrassed. I shouldn't be here, he whispered. But you are. I keep waiting for this to feel wrong. I reached up, touched his face. And? It doesn't. That night we kissed again. Softer this time. Slower. Less like a power grab, more like a prayer. But prayers don't save people like us. They just make the fall hurt worse. He laid beside me on top of the covers, fully clothed, hands stiff at his sides like he was afraid to move. I watched him until sleep took him. Listened to his breath slow. Watched the lines of tension disappear from his face. And I wondered, would he still follow me when I burned the whole fucking church to the ground? Because that's where this was headed. And I wasn't turning back. Not even if love tried to pull me. Not even if he begged. Because vengeance wasn't just a plan anymore. It was a purpose. And I wasn't just a woman with a story. I was the reckoning. Chapter 7. Let the whole damn church burn. I always knew it would end like this. Not with forgiveness. Not with peace. But with a final confession. Louder, bloodier, and more honest than anything ever whispered through that wooden screen. The truth isn't soft. It's not wrapped in warm light or sung by a choir of innocent voices. Truth is a fucking fire. And tonight I lit the match. The blog had exploded. 3 weeks after our first post on the Judas Gospel, we had over 1 million views, 12 priests under investigation, and whispers swirling through every corner of the diocese like rats scurrying from a flooded chapel. The church went into PR lockdown. They called it a cyber attack, said we were liars, bitter, misguided, spreading confusion. But we didn't stop. Every night, Nathan brought more files. Every name we published came with documents, photos, transfer logs, confessions buried by time and bureaucracy. And then the threat started. Emails, phone calls, letters shoved under my door. One even included a burned rosary and a single word, repent. I didn't blink, because I knew what came next. They'd try to crucify us, silence us, smear us until the whole world thought we were the ones poisoning the faith. But you can't kill someone who already made peace with hell. I'd been dead since the night my mother overdosed on sleeping pills and vomit, after a lifetime of being silenced by men in robes. This was resurrection. It was a Thursday when everything finally snapped. I woke up to Nathan pacing in my living room, one of the files clutched in his hands. His collar was gone. His priest clothes? Shoved in a duffel bag by the door. He wore jeans now. A plain black shirt. And his eyes, God, his eyes were shattered. I leaked it, he said. I sat up. What? I sent the final file to the press. The real one. The big one. My heart skipped. You mean? He nodded. Bishop Langston. Langston. The golden god of the archdiocese. The face of the church's purity campaign. The man who buried my mother's rape behind 6 different transfers and a $500,000 settlement he paid in silence money. They always said he was untouchable. Turns out no one is. What did you send? I asked. The victim testimonies. The internal memos. His handwritten statement of intent to transfer the predator instead of reporting him. I stared at Nathan like he was someone new. Do you realize what you've just done? Yes. He dropped the file on the floor like it weighed more than his soul. They'll come for us now. Let them. We didn't speak for a long time. Just stood there in the quiet, breathing each other in. And then, he kissed me. Not like the last 2 times. Not like shame. Not like temptation. This time it was a goodbye. By Saturday, the church was on fire, figuratively. 2 major networks ran the Langston story. The bishop issued a statement that sounded like a half-choked plea for mercy wrapped in denial. Protesters gathered outside the cathedral. Survivors began flooding message boards with their own stories. Hashtag the Judas Gospel was trending. Nathan stayed with me. We didn't talk much. We didn't touch. We just existed in the same space, 2 ghosts who knew what we'd done and who we'd become. But peace isn't permanent, especially not for people like us. The knock came at midnight. I opened the door and found 2 men in suits standing in the hall. Church security, not cops. They didn't flash badges. They didn't need to. You need to come with us, one of them said. I glanced back at Nathan. He was already standing. We're not going anywhere without a warrant. The other one smiled. This isn't legal business. This is spiritual. I laughed. Oh, fuck off. That's when they stepped inside. And that's when Nathan did something I'll never forget. He stepped between me and them. Touch her, he said, and I'll bury your whole goddamn institution with the rest of those files. They stopped, paused, then left. Not a word, because they knew we weren't bluffing. We had the receipts. The next morning, Nathan was gone. No note. No call. Just gone. I waited 3 days. Checked the hospital. Checked the jail. Checked the morgue. Nothing. Then the email came. Anonymous sender. No subject. 1 line of text. Forgive me. Attached was a video. Nathan, standing in a confessional booth. Eyes red. Face pale. I loved her, he said. And I failed her. He looked straight into the camera. I became part of the problem. I lied. I sinned. And I let an innocent woman carry the weight of justice on her own. I was a coward. A pause. And then, I know this won't fix anything, but I'm ready to be judged. The screen went black. Under it, a scanned copy of his full confession, naming every priest he ever protected, every sin he ever covered, every rule he ever broke. And at the bottom, his resignation. Signed, dated, sent to every major news outlet in the country. He gave me what I needed. He lit the final flame. The fallout was biblical. 10 priests removed from duty. 3 bishops under investigation. Langston stepped down. The Vatican issued a statement of deep regret, which in church terms is the equivalent of a shrug. And Nathan? He disappeared. Vanished into some spiritual witness protection program. Rumors said he was spotted in Mexico. Or Montana. Or some monastery in the Alps. I never saw him again. But every time I see a collar now, every time I walk past a church and hear the hymns spilling out the stained glass, I think of him, of what we did, of what we lost. And I remember, not all saints wear halos. Some wear scars. Some carry shame like scripture. Some trade salvation for vengeance. And some of us, we walk away from the fire we started, never looking back, because we already confessed, and let the whole damn church burn. The end.